Good afternoon, Tuesday. Good evening. All right, let's start over. Hey, good evening, True Seekers. Malloy here on the NoVam Radio Network. Thanks. I just got excited there. I heard Randy Rhodes' voice on this promo. She's going to be in the Phoenix on Friday. And just reminded me of the old days when we used to work for the same network. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. It's about 7 past the hour. So today it finally happened. We hear the report from the very model of the modern general and chief propagandist for the Bush crime family. He and Ambassador Crocker, there he was. And did you see the ad in the New York Times today, General Petraeus? Huh? Was that cool? MoveOn.org? Great, great ad. He and Ambassador Crocker feel we are oh so very close to victory in Iraq. If only those pesky anti-war naysayers would just get out of the way and give them unlimited time and money and soldiers and Marines, and please stop looking over my shoulder. Just let me continue with the killing. That's what they said once Congress got the microphones working. What a dog and pony show. Oh, my God. And what a boring one at that. Did you watch any of it? I tried. I swear to God, I tried to watch this. I watched that psychopath Duncan Hunter begin it all by immediately accusing Democrats of aiding and abetting Bin Laden, I guess. The most exciting part ended a few moments after the testimony began, when Code Pink protesters were ushered out of the hearing room. Cindy Sheehan would be congresswoman among them. Can't have any of that. I'll tell you who else was ushered out of the room, too, was Ray McGovern, former CIA honcho, who decided that taking the blue pill was a big mistake, took the red pill, came out of the ether, and has been raising hell against these Nazis ever since. We'll have the report from Ray McGovern coming up here in a few moments. It was awful. It was awful. Our North Metro Atlanta correspondent, military expert Sharon, had sent me a blog from McClatchy newspaper shortly after the Code Pink women were dragged out of the hearing. And this is the way McClatchy newspapers were reporting about 30 minutes into the hearing, when Republicans got their first chance to speak. Representative Duncan Hunter, Republican of California, criticized Democrats and some liberal groups who questioned whether Petraeus was speaking for himself or for the White House. Oh, please. Hunter said that what particularly irritated him was a MoveOn.org ad in the New York Times today that used a play on Petraeus' name. Petraeus, get it? Hunter demanded that the hearing get off to a clear start, expressing confidence in Petraeus. That's how he wanted to start it. And then Ike Skelton, the Democratic chairman, responded slowly and emphatically. I think Ike Skelton responds that way because that's the way he talks. Oh, my God. Ooh, I was watching Ike Skelton. And I, when I first saw him, I couldn't believe it. I thought, is this a commercial? Have we cut away from CNN for a commercial for some sort of laxative or something? Who is this guy? And then I realized, no, come on, that's Ike Skelton. But he responded slowly and emphatically when he said, "Let it be understood that the capability, the integrity, the intelligence, and the wisdom of our two witnesses require nothing but admiration from me and those of us who are about to receive their testimony. We expect their best judgment, and we will receive it." End quote. Now, if you want to know how whorish, no offense to sex workers, the Democratic Party has become, how willing they are to roll over for, well, George W. Bush, how disinterested the Democratic Party leadership is in becoming the majority party, in being a party determined to stop this. All you have to do is listen to Ike Skelton's statement. There it all is. Now, Ray McGovern, all Ray McGovern said, and he blogged this at consortiumnews.com, swear him in, McGovern writes. That's all I said. In the usual silence this afternoon, as first aid was being administered to General David Petraeus' microphone, it had dawned to me that when House Armed Service Committee Chairman Ike Skelton invited Petraeus to make his presentation, Skelton forgot to ask him to take the oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I had no idea that asking, swear him in, would get me thrown out of the hearing. I had a flashback to a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing in early 2006 when Senator Patrick Leahy reminded Chairman Arlen Specter that Specter had forgotten to swear in the witness, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, and how Specter insisted that that would not be necessary. Now, that may or may not be an invidious comparison, but Petraeus and Gonzalez work for the same boss who has a rather unusual relationship with the truth. How many of his senior staff could readily be convicted, as was the hapless and now commuted Scooter Libby, of perjury? So I didn't think twice about it. I really thought that Skelton perhaps forgot that the 10-minute interlude of silence while he fixed a microphone was a good chance to raise the seemingly innocent question. Swear him in? The more so since the ranking Republican, that would be Duncan Hunter, had been protesting too much in the obverse of killing the messengers. They had canonized the messenger with protective fire. Ranking Armed Service Committee member Duncan Hunter began what amounted to a SWAT team attack on the credibility of those who dared attack the truthfulness of the sainted Petraeus. On the chance that we didn't hear him the first time, Hunter kept repeating how independent Petraeus is, how candid and full of integrity, and compared him to famous generals who testified to Congress in the past, Eisenhower, MacArthur, Schwarzkopf. Advisedly, Hunter avoided any mention of William Westmoreland, commander of U.S. forces in Vietnam. If Petraeus is so honest and full of integrity, what possible objection could he have to being sworn in? With the microphone finally fixed, it quickly became clear Petraeus tried to square a circle in his very first two paragraphs. In the first, he thanks the committee for the opportunity to, quote, discuss the recommendations I recently provided to my chain of command for the way forward, end quote. Then he stretches credibility and credulity beyond the breaking point, at least for me. He says, quote, at the outset, I would like to note that this is my testimony. Although I have briefed my assessment and recommendations to my chain of command, I wrote this testimony myself. It has not been cleared nor shared with nor anyone in the Pentagon, the White House, or our Congress. Is not the commander-in-chief in Petraeus' chain of command? As Harry Truman would have said, does he think we were born yesterday? Doon, 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 doon. Yeah, it was an absolute, complete farce, joke. It was an insult to the American public. It was worse than that to the Iraqi public. And what did I hear? I'm flipping through the channels then later on this afternoon, and I got to Tweety Bird's program on MSNBC, Chris Matthews. And at the very end, last maybe 45 seconds, and I noticed they had Pat Buchanan there, and they had two other people as guests on Tweety Bird's program. I couldn't get the gist of what was going on, but I don't know if they were talking sarcastically or ironically, so I may have this asked backwards, but the consensus was that Petraeus' testimony today was a win for George W. Bush. I'm not sure what they meant by that, but that's how these things are gauged in the Bush crime family. I kicked a little ass today, didn't I? Huh? I won today, didn't I? Huh? What do you think? Okay. We'll be right back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Are all rich and free, but they chained my mind to an endless tomb when they took my only son from me. I know it's true. Oh, so true. 'Cause
They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
Yeah, that's the truth, isn't it, Chuckle Nuts? 21 past the hour. Now, if you want, dare I say this, a more valid opinion than David Petraeus or Kit Crocker, whatever the hell, what's Crocker's first name? Huh? I don't know his first name. I don't care. Don't email it to me. I don't care. Our ambassador, Crocker. Our pro-counsel. Our general, who has ridden into the Middle East to slay the Paynim, Petraeus. If you want a more precise sense of what we're doing and how we're doing, I should say, in Iraq, here's a radical idea. Ask the Iraqis. Well, someone did. Someone did. There was a poll conducted by ABC News, Britain's BBC, and Japan's public broadcasting broadcaster NHK. They put together some poll questions. They hired a company out of Vienna, Virginia, and a research company out of Istanbul. Now, how's that? How's that for globalized poll? Well, as a result, overwhelming numbers of Iraqis say the U.S. troop buildup has worsened security and the prospect for economic and political progress in their country. It's incredible. 47% want American forces and their coalition allies to leave the country immediately. 12% more than said so in a March poll as the troop increase was beginning. And 57%, including nearly all Sunnis and half of Shiites, said they consider attacks on coalition forces acceptable. Almost 60%. Do you understand that? The people that we are trying to help and democratize and bring them freedom and justice in the American, or some, not the American way, freedom and justice. Almost 60% say that they consider attacks on us completely justifiable. 70% in the survey said they believe security has worsened where the added forces were sent. And another 11% say the buildup has had no effect. Similar numbers said security in other parts of the country has deteriorated and that overall economic and political conditions have declined. So as Petraeus and Kit Carson sat there today, droning on and on and on to these asinine, dumbass questions being asked by the Democrats and the softballs being tossed at these two by the Republicans. All they had to do was just take a look at this poll. Now keep in mind what they're dealing with. Another report, the People's Report on Iraq, prepared by Phyllis Bennis and Eric Lever, researchers at the Institute for Policy Studies. Their report takes a look at what this war has cost Iraqis in the U.S. 2 million Iraqis have fled the war and are now refugees in neighboring countries. An additional 2 million Iraqis have been forced to get out of their own homes, remain displaced and homeless inside Iraq. Most Iraqis have electricity for about 5 hours a day. Clean water remains scarce and unobtainable for many. Iraq's oil production remains a fraction of what it was before the war. Occupation, war, and violence have so decimated the Iraqi economy that unemployment has reached 40% and higher. And this horrific situation that George Bush caused has cost U.S. taxpayers almost half $1 trillion so far, with no end in sight. Plus, over 3,700 dead Americans and 1 million dead Iraqis. Dear God. The People's Report also notes that the failure of the Iraq War has also meant a huge cost to our democracy at home. We have paid an enormous price in the deaths and shattered minds and bodies of our young soldiers, in the threats to an economy ravaged by billion-dollar bills to pay for an illegal war, in the destruction of so much of our infrastructure, security, and social fabric because of human and financial resources diverted to Iraq, and in the shredding of the Constitution and civil rights as fear becomes a weapon in the hands of the Bush administration aimed at Congress, the courts, and the people of this country. So like I always kind of half-consciously say, how much more of this is the American public going to accept before we turn this administration legally and peacefully into the streets? How much longer? What does it take? What in the name of God does it take? It's just a rhetorical question. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
When all your heroes have abandoned you, or have you abandoned them? From civilians to enemies, bombs can't discern. They just destroy all in their path. Will we ever learn? How many Iraqis per gallon on this endless killing spree? How many kids can you kill and send the lower class the bill so you can drive your kids to soccer practice in your SUV?
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
It's about 25 before the hour. I don't know what it was we saw today. For anyone who watched the testimony, Petraeus and Crocker, we had it on here at the house on computer since we couldn't get it on C-SPAN 3. And you know, it's a good place to bury it. What was C-SPAN 1 showing? reruns of hearings in the U.S. Senate? I have no idea. But we, you know, catching little bits and snatches of it today, it was just, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. This Petraeus is a car salesman. Only he's selling war and death and destruction, irrespective of what the people of both countries involved really want, the Americans and the Iraqis. It doesn't make any difference. So who's he talking to? He's talking to the knuckle-draggers, the war lovers in the Republican Party, and these jackasses in the Democratic Party who just sit there and let this continue. Oh, well. Fred Thompson
has joined the field of Republican wannabe presidential nominees. Yes, he has. Did anyone notice? Well, Jay Leno and his studio audience noticed. Indeed.
Earlier this week, this is from the Carpetbagger Report, earlier this week, former White House Press Secretary Ari Fleischer, who now runs a pro-war, pro-death campaign for an extreme right-wing neo-Nazi organization. And Fleischer's Jewish. This is the part I never get. These people just have have sex with these Nazi right-wing Republicans. And they're Jewish. I don't get this. Anyway, Fleischer said, it's not too late for Fred Thompson to jump in to the Republican field and seek the Republican nomination. But in order to make up for lost time, Mr. Thompson must demonstrate what Fleischer calls, quote, a command over policy issues, end quote. A command over policy issues. Fred Thompson, right. And Fleischer added, quote, he's got to knock the policy questions out of the park, end quote. Well, Jesus. This is what This is what the Carpetbagger reported. Freshly minted GOP White House hopeful Fred Thompson puzzled Iowans yesterday by insisting an Al-Qaeda smoking ban was one reason freedom-loving Iraqis bolted to the U.S. side. Thompson explained,
well, you know, the Al-Qaeda said you got to quit smoking.
He explained this to a questioner asking about progress in Iraq during a town hall-style meeting. Thompson's tale of a smoker's revolt baffled some in the audience of about 150 who came to decide whether the former Tennessee senator is ready for prime time. Jim Rand, who had driven from nearby McCook Lake, South Dakota, said, I don't know what that was all about. The Iraqis, a non-smoking ban imposed by Al-Qaeda forced the Iraqis to join with the Americans. But Fred, 70% of Iraqis want us out. This guy is worse than you could have possibly imagined. Now, last couple of days, he's been having trouble, Thompson has, explaining his position on Social Security, despite his assertion that that issue is one of the reasons he's running for president. Okay, what's your position, Fred?
Well, you know, the grommets on the downside of this is simply that, you know, occasionally you have to come to a wherewithal during which the administration has to drop back.
Thompson also dismissed the significance of Osama bin Laden, describing him as,
well, he's more symbolism than anything else.
He believes, quote, we better figure out a way to combat Al-Qaeda, end quote. Not that he necessarily knows how, of course, only that we better figure out a way. I think it's a little bit too late for that, Fred, thanks to your partner in crime, George W. Bush, don't you think? And Thompson proposed a bizarre constitutional amendment on gay marriage the other day. He argued that zero state legislatures have affirmatively approved gay marriage. That's a claim that happens to be wrong. How many? Two? Three? No wonder this freak is ducking the debates. He doesn't know anything. Oh, my God, you like George Bush? You're going to love this guy. Oh, no, wait, that's Giuliani. You liked George Bush, you're going to love Giuliani. All right, you liked Reagan, you're going to love Thompson. Jackass, freak, moron. Now, as far as Petraeus is concerned, hey, let me quote something for you. General Smedley Butler, two-time winner of the Congressional Medal of Honor, only soldier in the history of the United States military who's won two Congressional Medals of Honor. Back in 1935, he wrote in the magazine Common Sense the following, quote, I spent 33 years and 4 months in active military service, and during that period, I spent most of my time as a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. I helped make Mexico, and especially Tampico, safe for American oil interests in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenues in. I helped in the raping of half a dozen Central America republics for the benefit of Wall Street. I helped purify Nicaragua and for the International Banking House of Brown Brothers in 1902 to 1912. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for the American sugar interests in 1916. I helped make Honduras right for the American fruit companies in 1903. In China in 1927, I helped to see to it that Standard Oil went on its way unmolested. Looking back on it, I might have given Al Capone a few hints. Now, of course, Smedley Butler realized what he had done. David Petraeus, this apple polisher, this butt kisser, this carefully handpicked so far. New leader. He got his extra star. That's all he wanted. He wanted that 4-star. By God. Now he gets to be called general. Now he gets to be called general. Not brigadier, not major, not lieutenant, but now he gets to be called general. General David Petraeus. Amen and amen. And if he had to cancel his integrity to get that 4-star, what's the big deal? If anyone cares, this was published in Harper's several months back when Petraeus was, it became clear Petraeus was going to be our new spear point in Iraq. The book that he wrote about counterinsurgency, or about insurgency / counterinsurgency, if you read excerpts from that book, which Harper's Magazine published, what is happening in Iraq is absolutely the opposite of what Petraeus said is utterly and absolutely necessary to overcome an insurgency like the one that we are told exists in Iraq. Petraeus made it clear that for a city or a country with the population and the insurgent population such as it is in Iraq, that a minimum of 500,000 American troops would be necessary. And it goes on and on. Now, Petraeus is a liar. Petraeus is a sneak. Petraeus is an apple polisher. Petraeus will do exactly what his bosses on the neocon right tell him to do. He's got his 4-star. Pretty soon he'll get the Medal of Freedom. And this is what we're stuck with. Well, if anyone wants to comment on Petraeus' testimony today, sure. 800-989-1480. We'll take your call. Oh, did you hear about a truck in Mexico carrying ammonium nitrate to a mine caught fire after a highway crash, blew up, 34 people dead, 150 injured? No, I'm not laughing about the death and the destruction, no. Authorities said the two trucks smashed into each other Sunday night on a busy highway in northern Mexico. Drew a crowd of onlookers, and shortly after the crowd arrived, the wreckage caught fire and the ammonium nitrate exploded. Officials said they didn't know what caused the initial crash because everyone who was a witness to the accident is dead. Now, Randy Greyer, editor of Trucker News magazine, noted Mexican trucks loaded with hazardous materials like that will not be allowed into the United States. He says, I think it would be a very long time before the border would open to hazardous loads. Notice the qualifiers in that sentence. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Everything you know is wrong. Misinformation. There's a verse missing out of this song. Misinformation. Everything you know is wrong. Diamonds and tiaras by the score. Now she gets her kicks in Stepney, not in Knightsbridge anymore. So don't play with.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on. So
don't. You're such a man. You're such a man, George. And regarding the hearings today, when the staff of the Molloy program, both of us had our usually 3 o'clock production meeting about what we're going to do that night. You know, Kathy said, "All right, what sound do you want?" And I said, "Nothing. There's nothing there." And she said, what do you mean? This is a very important day. I said, have you been listening to this? And she said, well, yeah, off and on. I've recorded all of it. But she just left the computer running today to record it all because she had jury duty. And you know what's really funny? It was a case involving Clear Channel outdoor advertising. But she didn't, you know, she spent about 3-4 hours there, but got struck because she thinks, you know, she's in the talk radio business, so that immediately disqualifies her. But anyway, she had to spend 3-4 hours there going through that process of sorting out. They want very stupid jurors. Usually they want stupid people. And I'm sorry, if you've served as a juror, I'm not saying you're stupid. I'm just saying, and you know, I don't know what it's like. This is a civil case, not a criminal case. And they want people that they can, but I digress anyway. So, you know, Kathy said, well, what do you want? What should I get to portray us? What part of this? I said, what? Nothing. There's nothing there. I'm not going to put this crap on the program tonight. There's nothing that he said today, or that any of these clowns on this joint committee, dear God, they had two committees there. And not one of them sat there and said, you lying son of a bitch, did any of them talk about the refugees? Did any of them talk about the death and the destruction? Were there any questions about how much water people in Baghdad can draw out of their faucets that's drinkable every day? Nothing. I thought I was going to scream 5 or 6 times today. What are they talking about? And how many American soldiers, we don't care about the Iraqis, how many American soldiers died? And the time it took Petraeus to take off all of his body armor and get on a C-130 or whatever the hell he flies on and make his way to this hearing. How many Americans died? How many more are going to die? And as Keith Olbermann said tonight, this talk about reducing the number of soldiers there by 30,000 after we've increased it by 30,000, what a sham. What a joke that is. That's like a 25% off sale at your local department store after they've raised the prices 25%. This is obscene. This is sick. But, you know, so what, Malloy? It's going to continue. This war is going, this occupation is going to continue. You know what I predict? 5 years. 5 years. Maybe more. Until Iraq is it completely a failed state. Completely, like Afghanistan. Where maybe there might be one or two cities, as there are in Afghanistan, that function. That's it. And this huge $500 billion, $500 billion U.S. embassy that is so big, like the Great Wall of China, can be seen from space when it's completed, this fortress, so that we can begin the extraction of Iraq's oil. Let me tell you something, truth seekers. It's about time you and I faced a very hard truth, okay? Listen to me. Listen to me very closely, very carefully. We are not going to pull out of Iraq. It's not going to happen this year or next year or probably not even 5 years from now. This is a permanent situation. It's going to go on. This is like the Israelis and the Palestinians. This is going to go on and on and on. Do you hear me? We are never going to pull out all of our troops and get the hell out of a place in which we don't belong. It's not going to happen. Surely you've come to that conclusion too. Yeah, it tramples all your hope. It tramples all of my hope. It just bloodies every promise I thought these Democrats had made to me. In the run-up to the 06 election, these cowardly Democrats, these rotten bastards, do you think these people are going to do anything to get us out? What are they going to do? They will not take the political risk. The only power that Congress has left is to defund this war, to make it end, to provide enough money to protect our troops as they withdraw, as they get the hell out, and they will not do it. Democrats will not do it. because Democrats are cowardly. They have been beaten into a bloody pulp. They are like a battered spouse, and George Bush is the bully. And they continue, and they will continue. And it doesn't make any difference who is the next president. It doesn't make any difference how many seats the Democrats wind up with in the House and the Senate. This war, this occupation, is going to go on and on and on for the foreseeable future. You want to bet? Huh? Even when they have the White House and a majority in the House of the Senate, the Democrats still are not going to end this war. And you know what the proof of the pudding is on that? Because they could do it now. They could have done it a year ago when they were in the minority. They could have done it 2 years ago. They could have done it 3 years ago. They will not. Do not count on the Democratic Party. If you do, well, we'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back, 6:30 past the hour. Yeah, there's no reason to provide any sound from Petraeus today or from Crocker or from the clowns that were asking him questions. It was just, you know, the bits and pieces and chunks and snatches that I watched, it made me just so question. I live in a democratic republic. I live in a country that values truth and justice and freedom And, of course, you do that too many times, and you come to some upsetting answers to your own questions. So, coming up at the bottom of this hour is going to be Uncle Mike's Story Corner. And it just comes with a warning. The title of Uncle Mike's Story Corner tonight is Amputations, Torture, Brutal Cruelty, The Bloody Reality Behind the Statistics. Okay? So if you have small children or people with weak stomachs, don't let them listen. That's coming up at the bottom of the hour. Let's do some phone calls here about this garbage we were talking about the first hour. The number here is 800-989-1480 if you'd like to join in. Carl is calling from Olympia, Washington. Carl, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Mike.
Hi.
I'm glad you spend some time listening to you. And I just, you know, it's really hard to kind of take in all this information, mm-hmm. but, I think that, there needs to be, a moment of truth to this. And so, I came across this, message, an open letter to the leaders of the world,
uh-huh.
but in the sake of brevity, I'll just shorten it up. As much as I can.
Well, how long is it?
I'm just going to mention 5 to 7 lines
okay.
that I highlighted.
Right. Okay, go ahead.
And on one hand, we want to thank you. You have been formidable foes, but we know that every bad guy has a good guy inside. We simply no longer choose to be manipulated. We will discard your cards, vaccines, and chip implants because they have too many strings attached. We will grow our own food in our backyards as well as common areas. And as we see it, you are also being stalked by your own evolution, and you will change. The people of Earth yearn for the day when we will all live together in peace. And I think what this means to me is that I'm just not angry anymore. I mean, I'm not in fear anymore, and I'm just, you know, I'm really angry. And I think that Congress is basically working in behalf of the American people to keep them safe, like from terrorist attacks.
You do?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that maybe they are trying to, you know, roll over for George Bush because they don't want to see another 9/11.
Well, Carl, I can't think of one single thing that the United States Congress, either house, has done since the attack on September 11, 2001 that truly, really, literally, honestly increases security in this country. Nothing. Zero. Tell me, and I'm not trying to challenge you. This is, I'm looking for information. Tell me one thing.
I can't tell you one thing. I think that they want to appease George Bush, and that's the security and the safety that we will get, because the way I see it, 9/11 has been co-opted by the CIA.
And all right. Well, I think I understand what you're saying, Carl. But as far as anything that the U.S. Congress has done, and Carl, thank you. I appreciate your call. There's been nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. The Republicans didn't. The Democrats damn sure haven't. There has not been one single piece of legislation, which is all Congress can do. What are they going to? It's not a debating society, or it's not supposed to be. They're not just supposed to sit there and say, blah, 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 blah. They're not arming themselves and protecting the borders or manning the radar stations. Nothing. They've done nothing. Absolutely nothing. They created the Transportation Safety Administration, which is an absolute farce. The Homeland Security branch of government, which is worse. What have they done? Nothing. There has been absolutely not one single thing done to make this country more secure in the past 6 years. Nothing. And anyone who wants to dispute that, to quote our psychopathic leader, bring it on. I'd like to hear what? One thing, one piece of legislation, one act, one thing that George Bush has done that has made this country, George Bush or the Congress, Democrat or Republican, bring it on. I'd like to hear what it is. Jeff is calling from Hollywood, Florida, listening on the Internet. Hey, Jeff. Welcome.
Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good, good. I just wanted to, one good thing did come from not the Democrats or any particular party. It's MoveOn.org put out that full-page ad. And Wolf Blitzer today, I mean, I was about ready to jump into the TV screen. I'd like to remove that man's tongue.
What did he do?
He was talking about that they should give the money back that MoveOn.org raised for, you know, for candidates.
Now, he said that or someone on his show
said
it?
He did that. He said that. I mean, this guy is totally out of line. I mean, if they want to save some money, forget the ads. I'll yoke him out of his loafers. You know, I mean, this man sat there and attacked Democrats, especially Dodd. And then he tried to pull Dodd out and call him out so they could use it later as a political, you know, little political ad. It just infuriated me to hear Wolf Blitzer, you know, almost working with the GOP. And I got my suspicions as far as a Mossad agent, you know, and I know you worked at CNN, and I know it's infiltrated with God knows what now in the intelligence agency, and they're running the whole mind trip on the public.
The only thing I'm having a little trouble with here, Jeff, I think Wolf Blitzer, like every other news person so-called in this country, is totally co-opted, totally compromised, but are you sure you heard Wolf Blitzer
yes.
saying that MoveOn.org should return? I don't.
No,
think
no,
so.
Not MoveOn.org. The people that received the money from MoveOn.org should renounce MoveOn.org and give back the money.
Well, the people that received the money was the New York Times.
No, the candidates that received funding from MoveOn.org.
Wolf Blitzer said that? Now, you're sure?
I am sure.
Huh.
I am sure. He wanted the Democratic talking head, whoever he had on, to denounce MoveOn.org.
Mm-hmm.
And to return the money.
Well, I don't mean to keep pushing this. It just seems,
That's okay,
kind of weird. Are you sure Blitzer didn't present it as a question to the guest rather than a
statement? I don't know. It didn't sound as a question. It sounded more like, you should do this, the tone of voice
All right.
that he had.
Well, whatever. No? He probably should have just stayed away from the whole issue. What the hell does Blitzer care if a bunch of people send a bunch of money to MoveOn.org, who in turn buys a full-page ad in the New York Times, that states the obvious. Petraeus is a liar.
Exactly.
What's the big deal? Petraeus is a liar. Any general who has told the truth about the Iraq has been fired or forced to take early retirement or passed over for advancement, which means their career is over. And Petraeus is the only one to whom that has not happened, and the reason it has not is because he's a liar. So I don't see any problem. In court, it's called prima facie evidence. The ad speaks for itself.
Absolutely, it speaks for itself. And I commend them, and I want to commend them over the radio. Thank you for spending my money that I gave you, okay, for a good cause.
Absolutely, I hear you. Thanks, Jeff. Take care. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy.
It wasn't all that long ago that we started military operations. We've been there, how many days? You're counting the days since we've been there, because I'm not.
You're not even counting the bodies. You're not counting anything. Chuckle Nuts, it's just a big game. Now, earlier in the program, I was talking about the People's Report on Iraq. 2 million internal refugees, 2 million excuse me, external refugees. Prairie 2 has put this in perspective. He writes, to transpose the equivalent of 2 million refugees that have fled Iraq and consider that the United States is 12 times the size of Iraq, in order to have an equivalent population shift in this country, you would need to force the populations of New York, L.A., Chicago, Houston, Philadelphia, Phoenix, San Antonio, San Diego, and Dallas to flee to Canada and Mexico. That's assuming that the Iraqis have gone to Syria and Iran. To displace an equal amount internally, another 2 million. Now, keep in mind, this is comparable numbers, equivalent numbers in the United States. We are 300 million in this country. They are 26 million in their country. In order to displace an equal amount internally, relatively speaking, you would then need to empty San Jose, Detroit, Indianapolis, Jacksonville, San Francisco, Columbus, Austin, Memphis, Baltimore, Fort Worth, Charlotte, El Paso, Milwaukee, Seattle, Boston, Denver, Louisville, Washington, D.C., Nashville, Las Vegas, Portland, Oklahoma City, Tucson, Albuquerque, Long Beach, Atlanta, Fresno, Sacramento, New Orleans, Cleveland, Kansas City, Mesa, Virginia Beach, Omaha, Oakland, Miami, Honolulu, Minneapolis, Colorado Springs, and Arlington, Virginia. This is actually not quite enough people, but it uses up the list of the top 50 cities. Astonishing. This is what not a Democrat that I heard today, certainly not a Republican, and certainly not this apple polisher Petraeus or this freak Crocker who is our ambassador. Ambassador, Mr. Crocker, to what? To whom? Nobody brought these numbers up, see? Nobody. And God forbid they should bring up the number of dead Americans. And the number of dead Iraqis, that, well, that's an abstract. Now, this is in tomorrow's Independent of the UK. Barb sent this to me. She said, "Hi, Mike. Petraeus is a liar. This is in tomorrow's Independent. The view from Baghdad, mounting death toll, which makes a mockery of U.S. optimism." Just a couple of lines here. By the time General Petraeus had finished speaking on Monday, the slaughter in Iraq for the previous 24 hours could be tallied. It was not an exceptionally violent day by the standards of Iraq. 7 U.S. soldiers lay dead and 11 injured in the capital. Other instances of sectarian violence included a suicide bomb which had killed 10 and wounded scores near Mosul, while 10 bodies were found in Baghdad. 3 policemen were killed in clashes in Mosul, and a car bomb outside a hospital in the capital had exploded, killing 2 and wounding 6. And it goes on. I don't know. I don't know what anyone can do. That's why I say this occupation is not going to stop. It really isn't. And more and more and more American men and women are going to die in Bush's insanity, and then it's going to be the Democratic president's insanity. It is right now the Democratic House and Senate's insanity. These people don't need 60 votes in order to cut off funding. What they need is 41, and they have that, the Democrats. But they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it because every single Democrat, with 4 or 5 notable exceptions in this Congress, is a filthy coward. They are terrified. I don't know what they're afraid of. What, Bush? Opening their mail and getting an anthrax dose? What? I have no idea. Well, impeachment's off the table. We don't want to be distracted from the important business. Isn't that what Reid and Pelosi said? That there are things that need to be done. Okay, so they got the minimum wage up in a very chicken-dropping way. What, it's going to go up $2 over the next 3 years or something? What is it that the Democrats are working on that is more important than stopping the destruction of the United States, for God's sake? And by declaring that there are Al-Qaeda cells in the United States, what does that mean for the surveillance laws now that the Bush crime family has carte blanche to do what they want thanks to the Democratic Congress? It simply means that everybody in the United States is now a target. Democrats, yeah. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Somebody must have kicked you around, son. Who knows, maybe you were kidnapped, tied up, taken away, and held for ransom.
The next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. It's that time once again, boys and girls, for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. All right, kiddies, gather around. Everybody comfy? Ready for bed? It's time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. A little, sometimes not so cheery, bedtime epic to send you on your way to the land of Nod. Tonight's story was written by Martin Fletcher, and it's titled Amputations, Torture, Brutal Cruelty. The bloody reality behind the statistics. Can you say amputation? The medics had 20 minutes warning. A soldier badly wounded by a roadside bomb was coming in. It was only after the helicopter landed at the 28th Combat Support Hospital inside Baghdad's Green Zone that they realized quite how badly. As they cut away his blood-sodden bandages in the trauma ward, they found that all four limbs had either been severed or were attached by little more than skin. He had 70% burns to what was left of his body. They worked frantically to keep him alive. All his remaining limbs were amputated except for the top of one arm. Within hours, he was airborne again, this time bound for Germany, and an onward flight to the Brooke Army Medical Center in Texas. There, sometime soon, he will wake to realize that life as he knew it is over. He is 19. They were devastating injuries, said Lieutenant Colonel Bill Costello, the officer in charge of the emergency treatment section. I've seen so many of them. For Western publics, this is a sanitized war. Iraq is too dangerous for news teams to record properly the daily shootings, bombings, and executions. Next week's long-awaited congressional debate on President Bush's war strategy will be driven by abstract figures. But to glimpse the human agony behind those figures, it helps to spend 2 days with the 28th CSH, Combat Support Hospital, the China Dragons, a model of American medical excellence and generosity of spirit. 2 hours after the 19-year-old soldier arrived, another helicopter delivered a blindfolded, heavily sedated Iraqi detainee from Camp Buka in southern Iraq. The medics removed the blindfold to find his eyeballs bulging out. At first, they thought his eyelids had been cut off by his fellow prisoners. Then they realized that both eyeballs had been gouged from their sockets and were hanging loose. His fellow prisoners had also cut off his tongue. They had beaten him so severely that all four limbs required the slitting of skin to release the pressure caused by internal swelling. It was a stunning degree of cruelty, said Major Kim, the ophthalmologist who removed the eyeballs. Other victims arrived in quick succession, a 7-year-old Iraqi boy caught in a gunfight and hit in the abdomen, a 2-year-old girl from Kalsu, south of Baghdad, with a bullet in her brain, who survived, a 62-year-old Sunni elder from Dora, south of Baghdad, with at least 5 bullet holes in his back, the target of a drive-by shooting for apparently crossing a criminal oil smuggling syndicate, a 22-year-old woman, U.S. soldier, who had attempted suicide by overdosing on aspirin, was flown to Germany for dialysis. An Iraqi gunner whose Humvee had hit an improvised explosive device was admitted with shrapnel wounds to his head and a fractured skull. Another young Iraqi boy named Mustafa, 8 years old, had been shot in the head when his family's car was waved through one end of a checkpoint just as the U.S. convoy was entering the other. One of the convoy's gunners opened fire. Mustafa will be brain damaged for life. Who can prepare you for this? Asked Major William White, 43, the nurse manager of the emergency room. I've been doing this for 24 years. I've never seen this kind of stuff. What the Times saw in 2 days scarcely begins to cover the extraordinary range of patients treated by the 28th CSH, not least insurgents who injure themselves while attempting to kill U.S. soldiers. Lieutenant Tom Waters, 25, a nurse, said, quote, we've had guys suspected of being the trigger men for IEDs being treated next to the victims of those IEDs. Each month, the CSH treats half a dozen boys aged 10 to 15 who have been maimed while planting IEDs for the terrorists. Occasionally, the medics find themselves treating a suicide bomber who has blown himself up but survived. More often, they find bits of them, a thumb, a fragment of bone, embedded in a victim. Not all U.S. soldiers understand why the CSH tries to save America's enemies. Captain Sean Meadows, 39, a doctor, said, quote, you'll get soldiers coming up and saying, way to go, Doc, you saved that guy's life, he just killed Sergeant so-and-so, end quote. The medics counter that they cannot decide in the heat of the moment who is and who is not an insurgent, and that those who might later provide valuable intelligence. Major White said, quote, "We're not judge or executioner. Our mission is extremely simple. We treat everyone who comes in here. We treat them the same, and we try to save lives," end quote. The CSH even provides insurgents who cannot be saved with a Quran, an interpreter, and someone to sit beside them until they die. In the past 11 months, the 28th CSH also has treated escaped hostages, including one woman who was severely beaten by her kidnappers and jumped from a three-story window to escape, victims of chlorine gas attacks in Anbar province, and numerous Iraqis hit by celebratory gunfire. 10 alone on the night that the Iraqi football team won the Asia Cup in July. Major Kim, the ophthalmologist, joined the 28th CSH in Baghdad 6 months ago, and the first 2 months he treated a spate of Iraqis from the U.S. detention camps Cromper and Buka, who had been injured by rubber bullets fired to quell riots. Since then, he has removed a dozen eyeballs of detainees who have been stabbed or bludgeoned by other detainees. Major Aiken, the nursing supervisor, said, quote, "Sometimes it takes your breath away. They call this a holy war, and for this to be done in the name of God appalls me," end quote. Each medic has his own way of dealing with such horrors. Captain Meadows, a doctor straight out of MASH, hits a punching bag. Lieutenant Waters smokes Cuban cigars. Colonel Costello jogs around the helipad. Major Aiken photographs flowers, birds, sunsets, quote, "things of beauty," end quote. Mostly they are able to remain dispassionate until they find themselves treating someone they know. On July 10, a mortar exploded nearby. Many were injured. Major White was called to a trolley and found himself staring down at one of his nurses, Captain Maria Ortiz. He recalled, "We'd been talking an hour before. She told me, 'I've just got my wedding dress. I've got to lose 2 sizes. I'm going to the gym to work out.' She was coming back from the gym when the mortar hit. She died." And her portrait is now stuck on walls all around the hospital. The CSH has 2 mortuaries, one for Iraqis and one for the coalition. The bodies of Americans are taken away by helicopters on what are known as angel flights. Is the war worth this price? Major White says, quote, "If Iraq turns around, if you give these people an opportunity to succeed and become a country that's not oppressed anymore, then maybe it is worth it. You have to be optimistic. There's no way you can watch all these people die and do all these amputations and not believe it's going to work." End quote. Captain Meadows recalled a fellow medic rushing to help 2 wounded soldiers in the field and stepping on an IED. He was killed. "I love that guy," Meadows says. I want this to be worth it. I can't see us slinking away and saying it was all for nothing. You want it all to be for something." End quote. And another episode in Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Tonight's episode was from Martin Fletcher in Baghdad, who works for the Times of London. Can you say amputations? Oh my God. See, we don't pay attention to that. We truly, really, honestly don't. We will have videos on television of I hate to pick on Britney Spears again. We'll have videos of her comeback. We'll have a video of Senator Larry Craig saying, "No, I didn't, I'm not. But the issues that would have a profound effect on the American public that might motivate us to force this criminal administration to stop, to withdraw, to retreat, to get out of this horrible, horrible situation we and we alone have created. Those images will not be shown on American television. The government of the United States learned back in the late 60s and early 70s what graphic combat footage can do to a population. It can make people turn out in the streets in huge, massive demonstrations against the war. It can result in Americans turning out in by the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, to demand impeachment of a criminal son of a bitch who's somehow found his way into the Oval Office. That's what those images can do. And media now, television especially, being the exclusive domain of corporate America, is going to make certain that those images never get out. Never.
Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Or will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find, when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul.
A peace, free, and secure Iraq in the midst of the Middle East will have enormous historical impact.
Did anyone ever figure out what he meant by a peace, free, and Iraq in the Middle East will have enormous significance? Jesus, God. Your phone calls here we're so close to a break. If you'll just stay where you are, we're going to get your calls when we come back. There was the other thing I wanted to drop in here. This is from Marilyn Marchione, the AP medical writer. Thousands of GIs are being forced to cope with brain damage. The war in Iraq is not over, she writes, but one legacy is already here. In cities across America, an epidemic of brain-damaged soldiers. I mean, this is astonishing, isn't it? This is Bush's legacy. This is what he has done. She writes, thousands of troops have been diagnosed with traumatic brain injury, or TBI. These are blast-caused head injuries, and they're different from the ones doctors are used to seeing from falls and car crashes. They're so different that treating them is as much faith as it is science. The director of Vanderbilt University's Brain Injury Rehabilitation Program said, quote, I've been in the field for 20-plus years dealing with TBI. I have a very experienced staff, and they're saying to me, we're seeing things we've never seen before. And on top of that, doctors are realizing that symptoms of traumatic brain injury, these are not people that have chunks of their head blown away. These are people who have been in a blast zone up close and have had their brains rattled inside their skulls. But doctors are realizing that symptoms of that, TBI, overlap with post-traumatic stress disorder and that both have to be treated. It's astonishing. It says here, as more troops return from the war, brain injuries are a growing burden for the Veterans Administration, for the few programs to treat them, and for taxpayers to pay for their care and disability if they can't hold jobs. The problem here, of all these injuries, this TBI is straining. It strained the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs until now, according to the editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine and a Veterans Administration advisor, Dr. Jeffrey Drazen. He said, until now, the VA was dealing with a cohort of aging veterans with diabetes and heart disease and lung disease. But here come this population of young, brain-injured troops that need highly specialized care and no telling how much long-term care. That's unknown. People with TBI have frequent headaches and dizziness and trouble concentrating and sleeping. They may be depressed, irritable, confused, easily provoked, distracted. Speech can be impaired. Vision can be impaired. And it's hard to diagnose this because the damage rarely shows up on CAT scans. This is what Bush has done. I mean, my God, hundreds, thousands of returning soldiers who have to deal with this now, as do we, for the rest of their lives. And the families. And there was no reason for this. None. No justification. Except the insanity of people like Cheney and Bush and Rumsfeld. And a small elite cadre of generals like Petraeus. And that report today, sitting there watching that for the small amount of time that I did, my God. James writes, could you do a show about what parents can do to keep our kids out of reach of a possible draft? Please. He writes. No, I can't. I don't know what parents can do. If a draft is reinstituted in this country, break your children's legs in a manner that when they heal, they're crippled. I don't know. I have no idea. A draft? I at this point, I frankly don't think there's going to be a draft. I really don't. We are moving towards mercenaries. You know, we know we have 160,000 troops in Iraq, and what isn't talked about, we have 130,000 additional contractors, a huge number of whom are mercenaries. No truth has been told about our involvement, our invasion, our killing spree, and our occupation in Iraq. No true, correct reporting has been done by anyone. I'm talking about sustained, truthful reporting about the full scope of this invasion and occupation. That's why you and I are so ignorant, so stupid, so out of the loop. We do not know. And this Bush crime family and this corrupt media conspire to keep it that way. The Iraqis know. Soldiers who have been there know, but they can't see the scope of it. The soldiers, they know what's happening in their unit, what's happening in the city that they're sent to patrol. They know what happens when the Humvee ahead of them gets blown into a million pieces or when they get hit. Some of them know when they get hit, but they don't have the overview. That's where media is supposed to come in. That's where the reporting, the war correspondents, the television. They're supposed to bring this home to us so we can see exactly what's happening. But they don't, and we don't. We're like blind people walking in a coal bin at midnight. This occupation will never end. You know it as well as I do. It's going to become a permanent part of Empire America. It doesn't make any difference who is elected. It would make a difference. I mean, there are candidates out there who are advocating a total withdrawal, but those candidates have as much chance of being elected as you do, or as I do. We got some hard realities to face, truth seekers. Your phone calls, nothing but your phone calls when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. What, they revealed the name of another, the D.C. madam has revealed another, who's this guy? Ronald Roughhead? Is that his name? Who the hell is he? This is from Citizens for Legitimate Government, which is one of my favorite websites. I'll have to look it up. I never heard of Ronald Roughhead. Sounds like somebody that acts in movies like Debbie Does Dallas. All right, back to your phone calls. Let's start here with Larry, who's calling from Sacramento, listening on KSAC. Hey, Larry.
Hi, Mike. I'm glad to finally speak with you here.
So am I.
You know what? I couldn't help but notice, and this is, I realize this is a very, very tragic kind of comparison, but as you were describing some of the symptoms of the wounded veterans with the brain injuries, kept thinking it just certainly describes what I typically think of as being a George Bush, although there, like I said, there's no real comparison between those fine people and this person here. But, you know, he's speech challenged. He can't think straight, it seems, at times. He can't even understand where he is and so on and so forth.
That's true. That's so true.
It's so horrible. And I suppose symbolic in a certain way that he would want to have people be, you know, in his situation or less. So, you know, I was listening today to a little bit. Like you, I was torn between listening to and not wanting to listen to this Betrayus as a Move On and others have described it. I happen to think we really ought to rename a Croc, too. I mean, it's begging Croc-O to Croc-O and Betrayus seem to be very fitting.
I can't figure out this Crocker or anyone who would be an ambassador to a country that has a puppet government that we've installed and a country that has, if you count the private as well as the Pentagon forces, 300,000 soldiers there. That's not a government. It's no longer a country. There's nothing legitimate going on there, and we have an ambassador to what?
Yes, exactly. An ambassador to us.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. And you know, I think also I'm going to make some phone calls tomorrow, prompted by a number of things, to talk to the Senate and House people and ask them to demand as a citizen that they forget about this nonsense that Bush can override the veto. It happens that we have approximately, depending on the poll that you listen to, 70% of the populace does not agree with this war. And Congress, I believe, has a lower approval rating than Bush.
Yeah.
I think somebody ought to get reality in their head really soon and say, send it to him. Send it to him so that he has to veto. And once that is done, it'll be very, very apparent what a complete mess this is and who is behind it.
Why doesn't the Democratic Party leadership come to the same conclusion or realization as you?
I'm wondering if they're hypocrites or complicit.
Or cowards. There is a third choice.
What?
Or coward.
Or coward, yes, I suppose. Yeah.
You know, I have good friends who tell me that the Democrats are complicit and that I make myself look like an ass every night on this program when I expect the Democrats to do anything to stop this man. You know, I get emails from folks who say, you know, you've got to be kidding yourself, and you're kidding your audience if you think the Democrats, if you really believe the Democratic Party leadership in its current form is going to do anything about this occupation, anything about removing this criminal administration, anything about reversing the damage that this this administration has done. And, you know, I sit there and read those emails and I think, you know, am I really that stupid? But over the years, I've tried to make it clear I don't have any faith any longer in the Democratic Party leadership. I really don't. Individual Democrats, yeah, I still do. There are still some out there who I think have courage and morality and ethics, who want to see this country at least put back on the track we were on.
Really?
You know, but I don't know anymore, Larry. I'm kind of.
You know, I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're misplaced in any kind of thought that it could be different. But what's apparent to me is that we do have some people who you call them complicit, call them whatever, but call them absent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing that seems to me to be absolutely true. There was a movie a number of years ago about a band of people who went to Mexico, and they were going to bring back the wife of a rancher who had been taken down, the professionals, I believe it was by name.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, each of them had their own area of expertise. One of them was a dynamiter, and a fellow who was kind of like what you would call a liberal, you know, a fancy free sort of person. He was told by the dynamiter, he said, you know, when I push this plunger, he said, it's dynamite that pulls that hill down, not faith. And I thought that's a remarkable kind of thing to remember. That whole movie, by the way, if you get a chance to see it, I would really recommend it.
What's it called?
I believe it's The Professionals.
The Professionals. All right. Larry, thanks. Good to hear from you. Take care.
A good talk with you.
All right, sir. We'll talk again. Bob is calling from Oklahoma City, listening via the internet. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing. Mike, I've been working in the oil fields of Texas, Louisiana, Kansas, and Oklahoma for the past 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And during that period, you know, I found maybe a handful of liberals. It seems like money overrides humanity all the time. I mean, I'm looked at as a total outcast, as a pariah to the, you know, to my own oil field race.
Why?
It just appears to me that as long as people are making money, whether it's on the through the blood of anyone else or through whatever George Bush wants to do, it's okay.
And well, I say you're considered pariah because you don't necessarily go along with that.
Not at all, no, sir.
I got you.
I've been talking for years to these people about what's going on. Mm-hmm. They no more want to pay attention than a man in the moon, Mike.
Right.
Been listening to your show forever, for years now. You're talking to the converted. Every time I talk to someone on the outside, I'm looked at as, again, like as a freak show.
Mm-hmm.
Just so frustrating. It's extremely frustrating. The 70% of the people that are against this war obviously don't participate, you know, from that point of view within the oil field.
Right.
Seems like I'm going to end up having to get out of it and try to find something to do where I can actually make a difference. At this point, you know, it's getting to be a small world with a few people, like-minded people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I appreciate everything you do, Mike, everything that Kathy does to fight the fight. It seems like the more we fight, you know, you try to hang on to threads of hope. And when you do hang on to the thread, it's just a thread. It'll break.
I hear you.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Thank you, Bob. Good to hear from you. Take care. I hope you call in again. We have a break coming here, so we'll just hold off for a second before we talk. Who's next? Gilbert in Lake City, Florida. Hi. Stick around, Truth Seekers. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereign. You've been given sovereignty, and you're viewed as a sovereign entity.
Dumb bastard. Oh, God. All right, back to your phone calls. As promised, Gilbert is calling from Lake City, Florida, listening via Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Gilbert.
Hey, Mike. Good evening. Thank you for taking my call, sir.
Sure.
I'm one of these guys. I guess you call me the common folk. I'm a middle class. I'm a truck driver, and I'm independent.
Mm-hmm.
I think America's really just even getting the shaft, even when we're not looking, because over the last 2 weeks, now we're allowing, say, the Mexican companies, you know, that are owned and operated by these big conglomerates that are half American, half Mexican now.
Mm-hmm.
We've not done anything to close the borders. If anything, we've done nothing but put the welcome mat out and open the borders. We're now letting Mexican trucks come into the country and deliver their products anywhere in the country at rates that, you know, an American driver couldn't even begin to touch. That's an independent when fuel's $3 plus a gallon.
Yeah, we talked about this last week, I think Thursday or Friday. And not to say that I don't welcome your phone call on this topic again, but we did devote quite a bit of attention to it, and we'll continue to do so with this decision now, pushed by Bush and okayed by the Congress. It makes you wonder about insurance, makes you wonder about whether or not folks can read road signs like "Do not enter." It's incredible what has happened here.
Well, that just kind of goes to prove my point that, you know, our vote, in this last election, all the politicians and, you know, how they're going to close the borders and they're going to make America safe and, you know, how our tax dollars aren't going to go to waste. And when you look up and just add up what we're spending in this war, my God, we could have become, you know, a nation, a strong nation, and take care of ourselves and take care of our own people. At this rate, the poor just keep getting poorer and the rich just keep getting richer. And, you know, for a common guy like me, it's so aggravating because there's absolutely nothing we can do to stop it. It's a downhill roll, and, you know, everyone can see the bottom of the hill, but as long as the big boys are happy, though, the world and the economy, everything's just great. Just ignore it. You know, it's just going to go away.
But, well, yeah.
I think we all see the end of it here.
Yeah. Always before, Gilbert, I think there's always been a tension between the working people in this country, and of which I'm one also, and the people who can control everything. I mean, that tension has existed for a long time. But in the past, you could always kind of count on wages very slowly going up, the middle class expanding, especially after World War II, when a liberal Democratic Congress, being pushed by FDR, enacted all sorts of legislation to build a middle class, to get people into college, returning veterans, to provide money for small businesses, to, you know, just all the things that the Democrats did. So you could always kind of look at things and say, well, things can only get better. And they always did. I mean, this used to be that was the whole point of being an American, whether you were native born or an immigrant. Because things get better. Things get better. Until Bush. And things have gotten worse. And they continue to get worse. And I'm just hoping that, Gilbert, that we can pull out of this. I know so many nights I sound like such a complete alarmist. But my God, what are we supposed to do? The report came out last week, 4,000, a net 4,000 job loss for the month of whatever it was, August, July, I don't know. That's the first time that's happened in over 4 years. Bush has, and his policies. You can see another example in this meltdown in the mortgage lending industry. What would prompt mortgage lenders to deliberately entice people into taking on more debt than they can handle if it were not to bundle these mortgages and sell them overseas and make their money on that? They weren't interested in making their money on people making payments on their mortgage. We have our mortgage through a credit union. And a credit union would no more bundle your, at least ours wouldn't, bundle your mortgage with a bunch of other ones. They want the income, a nice, steady, slow, over the years income. But Bush policies have just screwed everything. You know, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Any Republican who wants to call in and tell me and this audience one single aspect of all these years of George W. Bush that has benefited America, please do. But it's an easy statement for me to make because he has done nothing.
I am perfectly comfortable fighting the world. If you're perfectly comfortable with all that's been done, gaze at your daughters and gaze at your sons. Ask yourself this question over again. Would you be perfectly happy if it happened to them? If you're perfectly comfortable, come into our friend.
I'm honored to shake the hand of a brave Iraqi citizen who had his hand cut off by Saddam Hussein.
Twenty-five before the hour, email from Dana. Hi, Mike. Like most of us who have been protesting this immoral war since before it began, I'm frustrated at how little impact my efforts seem to have. Lately, though, I've had a change of attitude, and it's helping. I do what I can to stay focused on what's right for me to do and try not to worry about whether others respond. It's my moral responsibility to oppose this war in any way I can. I have to do it, even if most people don't get it, think I'm nuts, or whatever. Of course, I don't maintain this attitude every day. It disintegrates into anger a lot. But when I can regain my sense that I must protect and speak out regardless of anything or anybody, I can keep it another day and stay reasonably serene. Dana in Lake St. Louis. Thanks, Dana. In a sense, I guess I'm trying to get to that point. I mentioned this the other night. I have a lot of respect for people who have found, oh, say it any way you want, their center, their core, balance, cosmic peace, you know, whatever. But who can focus on the moral imperative to resist this and not lose their minds? I get afraid sometimes. I'm just going to go stark raving, babbling nuts, because of the confusing emotions I feel. You know, every morning I open the Times, every time I go on the internet, every time I read something or listen to the kind of garbage that I heard coming from that House conference room today with this apple polisher and this freak Crocker sitting next to him. I just think no. This is insanity. Don't listen to this, Mike. This will make you crazy. You know, focus on your kid. Go for a walk with Molly. Take her to the playground. Vacuum the carpet. Do something. And then I think, well, yeah, okay, but, you know, this is what I do for a living. This is the only thing I'm qualified to do. I'm not qualified to be a painter or a truck driver or a plumber or a brain surgeon. You know, the only thing I'm qualified to do is this. And I think to myself, okay, how much of this can you absorb before your brain snaps? So I have a lot of respect for people like Dana and other folks who have figured out, you know, to let the river just rush. Let it rush by. Don't try to stop the river. Just let it rush on by. And you can stand there in the middle of the river and retain your sense of balance. You can do what you have to do. But I agree with her. There's a moral imperative, and this is where I have to say this applies to everybody, not just to liberals or Democrats, but also to Republicans, conservatives, believers and atheists, just everybody. There is a moral imperative to resist this occupation. There are a lot of people in Israel who say that about the IDF's occupation of the territories. A lot of people, a lot of Jews in Israel who say this is insane what we're doing. We have a moral obligation to resist. And there are people in America who are saying the same thing. Not enough yet, I don't think. But there has to be that. There has to be swept along by this insanity, this immoral behavior, this criminal behavior, to allow ourselves to be led by war criminals, by any definition. Bush and Cheney and Gonzalez and Rumsfeld and Negroponte and all of these people, they are by definition, by the definitions we insisted on and laid out at Nuremberg after World War II, these people are war criminals. By our definition. There's no debate on that. There's no debate on it. And that's who we're allowing to lead us. So, you know, how do you develop maintain or develop your sense of moral balance if you exist within a society that you know is being led by war criminals? How do you do that? I guess you come to the understanding that short of a criminal act, there's nothing you can do to remove these people from power. You've got to rely on the system. But in the meantime, you can do what Dana and a lot of folks are doing. Just say, no, I refuse. I refuse. I will not support this. Carmine is calling from Ohio. Carmine is listening on XM Satellite Radio. Hey, Carmine.
How are you, Mike? How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
It's very frustrating. It's so discouraging. I mean, how this thing came about. I mean, I understand how it came about, but I don't understand it.
I know.
And don't count on any Republicans calling in, because I'm a truck driver, and a lot of times when I go to truck stops and pay $3 a gallon for fuel and my guts get twisted, I start to, sound off about Bush. And you don't get anybody says anything anymore. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, you'd have everybody down your throat that supported him, that mm-hmm. got him where he is today. But mm-hmm. today, I don't care where you go, Mike, in these truck stops, you go sound off, you let your frustrations out, you start bashing Bush, and nobody says a word.
Nobody defends him, huh?
No, nobody. They sit there mute. And that's how I get relief, mm-hmm. because the frustration and hopelessness that you feel in this situation, that is nowhere near anything I have ever seen in 60 years of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen anything going on in government like you see today.
I hear you.
You know? And mm-hmm. I get some, and I got to thank you. I got to thank you because you bring some levity to the situation, because I can always count on you in my frustration to get a real good laugh at these names that you call them.
Well, that's great, and I'm glad that's not working for me tonight. I'm just in kind of a
I know that.
A fog tonight because of this Petraeus thing.
Yeah, I sense that. I sense that in you. I sense it. And I sense it in your callers, too. By the way, you had some great callers tonight. And I really had a couple of questions to ask you and a comment.
Sure, go ahead.
One comment I want to make is, when I hear this man's voice, this president, the hair on my arms and my back stand up, just the sound of his voice.
He
topped the cake either the other day or yesterday or something when he said something about directing the CIA and intelligence and the military to go and seek out and find Bin Laden and the people responsible for 9/11. And I'm saying to myself, my God, this guy 6 years later is now calling for the apprehension of the people that did this damage to us in 9/11. Mm-hmm. When his other words echo in my ear, when he made a comment based on a question of pertaining to Bin Laden, and he had the audacity to say, well, I don't think about him much anymore, and
right.
I really don't pay that much attention to anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, it's just horrendous. It's horrendous. And I'm with you. I'm in the mood that you're in tonight. I'm very melancholy about the situation. I'm so discouraged and hopeless. And I really wonder if we could actually pull it back anymore the way we did over the years before when we had situations that were, you know, not good and unfair and unjust. I don't know if we could do that anymore, Mike.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that's got me apparently just off the groove tonight is thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
I said earlier, we've had some rough times in this country, but we've always managed somehow to get it back on track. I don't think we've ever gotten to the point that the founders of this country hoped we would get to, but you know, we get it back on the road and keep moving forward. You know, a lot of stuff we had to work through, making sure everybody had equal rights in this country, making sure that people were treated decently, making sure that our job situation was such that the people could support themselves, they could have a middle class here, that our foreign policy was not causing damage, even though it was. You know, we tried this
and over
again, and there always seemed to be here's a cliche for you, that silver lining behind whatever dark cloud we were dealing with. And I'll tell you, Carmine, I'm having a hell of a time now seeing the silver lining. And
yeah.
I don't want to come on this program every night and bum everybody out.
Right.
You know, I want to get people pissed off. Sure. I mean, that's what we're here for. That's what we're about
right.
in this program is to sit down and say, yeah, I'm angry. I'm pissed off. What to do. And out of that, maybe focus or channel that kind of energy. But I'll tell you, man, sometimes it's just getting
real hard.
It is indeed. Carmine, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal.
All right, buddy. You take care.
All right, you too. Drive safely.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Watch the white line. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. about 9 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight and also answered your calls. In Phoenix at our flagship station, KPHX, Billy Foster, who is the moderator at the Nova M chat room. If you haven't been in there, you should go. Our senior correspondent is Chris in Minnesota. The executive producer of this program is Catherine Bay. Back to your phone calls. David is listening in Buffalo, New York on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, David.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, the giant is so large that it's going to take not a thousand cuts. It's going to take probably billions and billions of cuts.
Yeah.
And your cuts are the staircase that enables us to make our cuts.
What?
And we kind of rely on you, although people may feel as if we're walking on you or abusing you or you feel mistreated or not being effective. You give us a chance to offer our daggers.
Oh.
And it's going to take... Huh?
Easy on the knife thing there.
Well, you know what I'm saying, though?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
All right, and then if Bob would like to be an effective brush fire,
yeah.
Since we're not using daggers anymore.
Okay.
Celldeath. Dot org.
What is it?
Celldeath, CELDF .org. It's enabling us to take our power back from the corporations,
yeah.
From the inside out.
All right, you've got some sibilance to your voice, and I did not get the website. Go real slow.
Celldeath, CELDF .org.
CELD, what's the last letter?
F as in Frank.
Frank. CELDF, Celldeath?
Yes, Celldeath. .org.
.org. All right, I got to check this out. What the hell is it?
It's that they have over 100 communities. I have something else to say, if I could, quickly, though. But they have over 100 communities.
Oh, that's the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund.
Yes.
Okay,
and
I got gotcha.
You. They're attacking corporations from the inside.
Great.
And we're taking away their power. And it's bring them to your community.
Uh-huh.
And let's address it from the inside out.
Well, that's pretty cool. I'll have to look at this website. It looks like it's pretty big.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And we need everyone to join, everyone to participate. And it's only you're a staircase to our future, Mike. And I don't want you to go anywhere. And we need you to allow us to help everyone.
All right.
And you're there for us, and we're here for you.
All right, David. Thank you. I appreciate it. Appreciate the way you put that. Although, I don't know, we started with knives and daggers and we wound up on a staircase. I feel like I'm in a Led Zeppelin song or something. But that's all right. No, Dave, listen. Thanks for the website. It looks like one we need to check out. We got time to talk with Evan? Evan's calling from Durham, North Carolina, listening on the internet. Hey, Evan.
Yeah, how's it going?
It's going.
Right. Well, I had two questions. Does Osama bin Laden speak English?
I think to a certain degree he does. The entire bin Laden family speaks English, I believe. They operate with their construction conglomerations all over the world, and they've been business partners of the Bush family. I can't speak directly to the son Osama, but I would assume that, like most educated Saudis, he does. He does speak English, yeah.
Because these videos he puts out, I think they're in Arabic, right?
They seem to be, if we believe them. See, I don't believe, Evan, that we're watching Osama bin Laden in real time when it was recorded. I don't think it's Osama bin Laden. B, I don't think what's coming out of his mouth is actually what's coming out of his mouth. This, to me, is a psyops trick by either the CIA, the DIA, the Defense Department, some shadowy organization put together by the Bush crime family. I don't believe anything from them anymore.
Which brings me to my second point.
Okay.
Noam Chomsky. He mentions Noam Chomsky, and he wants people to read Noam Chomsky.
Right.
Now, doesn't that kind of, it seems to me that this is for the September 11th anniversary,
right.
But it also seems like a glaring trap for Noam Chomsky. I think that he's on the verge of being done a deal just like Jose Padilla.
Well, Chomsky has always advocated, as far as I know, for the past 35, 40 years, fair treatment for the Palestinians. As a matter of fact, he takes it one step further. He condemns the actions of Israel in the occupied territories. And, of course, that was one of the warnings that Osama bin Laden, if you want to believe the official story, put out there, that the great Satan, that's us, had to be purged from the Holy Land, which is Saudi Arabia, because of Mecca and Medina, and we also had to get out of the Middle East and stop hurting the Palestinians. But, Evan, I got to leave it there. I'm sorry we ran out of time, pal. Thanks for participating in the program tonight. However you did that, I do appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Really, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.